Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a really fun show tonight. Author, best-selling author, singer, songwriter. Singer might not be on the list, but I'm throwing it on there right now because we're going to play a song that he's submitted to us in just a few minutes. Author, playwright, actor, and so much more. Rafe Hayes will be on the show with us in just a moment. He is a returning guest. Many of you enjoyed our time together a couple of months ago talking about his book, The Next. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, but then dive right into his new novel that is not out yet. So we're getting a sneak preview called Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch. His song Dead in the Water will be accompanying that along with an album for the novel, which is a huge, really cool thing to do. But before we get to that, a couple of housekeeping announcements. We are on a new hi-fi. That makes it sound like we're in the 1960s, but we're on a new hi-fi platform here on Blog Talk Radio. And I will love your feedback, good, bad, or ugly, on how it sounds to you, the listener, this week. This I just converted over to this tonight, so we're kind of on a beta test program because we do so many broadcasts that they wanted to kind of get people who are immersed in this, you know, get their feet wet and make improvements along the way. So if it sounds great, let me know. If it stinks, let me know. I have a little bit of feedback from my end, and that's just, you know, what I'm hearing as we're testing it out. So it's new and exciting and fun. We are also converting all episodes after the show to YouTube videos. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to the show and are on YouTube all day long, you can now go directly to YouTube and just look for Garrett Miller or Rated G Radio and the episode, and you can listen. You can just click play, and it's just like watching a music video or a movie or something like that, and I encourage you to do that with reckless abandon, but without further ado, because we've got tons of stuff to talk about tonight. Rafe Hayes returns to Rated G Radio. How are you, my friend?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How is the weather in summertime in New York?
Super muggy, super warm. I personally love that because I like getting all sweaty and sticky. I think it's because I dance so much and I'm just used to sweat. But everybody else is kind of bitching.
Well, is it okay? Now, I've never been to New York in the summertime. Is it true that New York smells like pee all during the summer?
There gets to be peak times during the year in which urine just, yeah, it smells like urine. But mostly it smells like sweat more than urine. You know, people,
okay.
New Yorkers get acclimated to, you know, the lingering sweaty armpits that just, you know, just stay on the subway and stay everywhere, and then we just get used to it. But, you know, tourists just start to complain and everything, whatever. It's New York.
It's part of the charm. So, I would love to be back there this time of year to visit.
I just have to ask one question about you.
Yeah.
You. So how is your new album doing?
It's doing really well. You know, I'm an indie artist on a tiny little label that is, you know, helping with some distribution and things like that. But I'm always surprised. I'm getting orders, you know, several times a week from people who I'm either networked with or heard it or whatever the case is. So I get to do a little personalization, an autograph, and I mail it out with maybe a little, you know, treat inside with the CD. The iTunes, I'm getting reports back on that. The Gay Wedding single is selling well. The Blonde Jesus album is doing well for an indie artist. And I'm getting stations around the world that are hearing about it, either through, you know, things that I'm sending out or just through word of mouth. And they're coming back and saying, we'd like to play the Gay Wedding single. So I'm obviously thrilled. Love it. And, you know, I wish
to do any live performances.
Well, speaking of that, I'm actually going to my vocal coach right now, and we're working on a 5-song showcase so I can actually take this tour on the road. And, you know, go have some fun. So I'm looking to do that probably fall, late fall, winter time. And even the UK is calling. They want me to go over and do like a mini tour after the first of the year. So we'll see how that all plays out. But I'm very excited and I'm open to the, go ahead.
Yeah. No, inevitably they're going to call you and want you to do it live because that's the most thrilling part about it.
I think here's where I need help. I tend to be a little over the top and I need to learn how to like dial it in so I'm not looking like I'm, you know, Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory going out there when I just need to go out and, you know, sing the song and have a good time. And so that's one of the things that I'm working on with my vocal coach, so I don't look, you know, like I'm an animated cartoon that should be in like Hellcats and something like that.
You're living your hairband dream, and they just have to get on that train.
I'm on board with it. Well, actually, I had the extensions taken out last week. They can only stay in for a certain period of time, and the time was up, so I had to go have them taken out. And my hair looks incredibly thin at this point, but it's still, you know, longer than it was. And I'm going to be that '80s hairband. I'm reliving the dream, but you know. There we go. It's all fun. I'm having a great time, and I appreciate you asking. But this is you. We could have a separate hour-long conversation about anything else some other time, but tonight's about you. I need to let you know that when I have authors on, I make a point of always reading at least a portion of their book before the show, but I never read the full thing because I'm one of those people that has this terrible case of Tourette's where if I know the ending of the movie Titanic, I'm going to say, "And the ship sinks!" You know, while we're doing the interview, so I don't ever get to that part. And so since the time that we left, off, I think it was probably in May, I just kind of let that sit. And so in the last couple of days, I've re-picked up the next, and I'm continuing the process of reading the book. And I am now so deep in the book, I think I'm going to have to finish this tonight. I may be up until like 2 or 3 this morning actually making that happen. But I'm at the point in, I think it's chapters 17 or 18, where the detective is now coming back down to the main character's apartment after being up in Ruben's apartment, and they know that Ruben is missing. And so that's where I'm at in the book, and I am on pins and needles. I was reading that up until about 10 minutes before the show tonight, going, I got to finish this chapter, and I couldn't even do it.
So. Yeah, I mean, I always have a question, because I never understand how, you know, and talk show hosts and you, for instance, when you have all these guests, how are you supposed to actually read everything that your guests write? You can't. There's no way you could.
No, it's nice, but I just don't have the time. Yeah.
I know, right? Who has the time? But anyway, thank you very much for reading even 18 chapters. That's fantastic.
Well, I'm finishing it, so that's my commitment, because I'm not going to wait until your third appearance on here to say, and I'm finally on the last 3 pages. You know, can we get through tonight? And I'll finish that. I am going to finish it tonight, and I'm really excited. And I think one of the things that I struggled with in the beginning, and honestly, it was really hard for me, is the main character has a lot of, anger issues. He's a very angry guy for a lot of valid reasons, and I think we're now starting to get into the point where we understand some of that. But honestly, the number one thing that I keep hoping as I turn each page on the Kindle is that he's finally going to clean his apartment.
Keep reading, it happens.
I can't wait for that.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a Calamity Jane moment. But I think that the thing that, so I used to teach Meisner classes, Meisner technique of acting, which was just a major, major kind of stop on the train of my life, was finding the teacher for that taught Meisner, and then so I ended up being a student for several years, and then teaching for 4 years. And the thing that one of the first things I learned about myself, as well as for other people, and this is generalizing males, but that guys get very angry, only we have all this shame around anger, so we just swallow it. And the more we swallow it, the more angry we get, but also the more sad we get. And then we get blocked. We just, we shut down. And so the beginning of the next is really about the guy that has been doing this for all his life. But particularly because of circumstances leading up to the very first chapter, that has him completely shut down because he's not getting to it. So shut down to me means you've got so much emotion and you're not getting to any of it. Not that you're dead, not that you're flatlined emotionally, but that you've got so much and you can't get to any of it. So you shut down. So that's what's happening in the first. And I think that anybody who can relate to that to any degree is going to struggle in the first 3 chapters. I know they struggle because I get all these readers who write in how they can't make it past the first 3 chapters, and I think these are the people that relate to it the most.
I totally am on board with exactly that, because I think that was the hardest part. And I see these glimmers of hope that people who care for the character, that from the neighbor who bakes them turkey with gravy and sweet potatoes to the detective, and all of these people desperately want to help him. And he is just, you know, he's really struggling on trying to be open in any capacity in his life. And it's interesting to watch his evolution as he starts to possibly think that there is hope in life. And I love where this is going. And now this is, you know, since it's a murder mystery, you have, you know, the romance, the old romance, the new romance, you have the neighbors and everything else that's going on. And I'm just a little on the edge of my seat going through the story because, you know, now that you're, you know, I'm invested in the book and now it's like, I want to see what happens. And I keep thinking, I hope it's not this one, but boy, could, you know, this is happening and the circumstances that are coming up, you are just, you know, you're locked and loaded. You're ready to, you know, go down with everybody for the rest of the story. So I hope that there's rainbows, UFOs, and the space aliens at the end that are going to save the day.
Well, there's two major elements for any good novel, and this is, I think this is rather universal. And one is you need the forest, so that's the setting. And in my book, the setting happens to be New York City. It also happens to be the world of this particular courtyard, as well as he's a songwriter, and his setting is also his past, right? So this is the forest. But what's more, what's equally important is that you have a great story, and so that would be the path through the forest. I think a lot of people write a lot of the forest and kind of forget the path through it. So you're seeped in all this atmosphere, and it can be very enriching and beautifully written and poetic. But then you often feel like, but what kind of journey am I taking other than just kind of a metaphysical rambling type of setting, you know, environment, and without a really strong forward motion of a path to take. And that's the second element that is absolutely important in a good book, especially if it's, you know, going to reach 200 pages long, is that this path has to be strident, clear, and suspenseful, right? You can't just see the whole path from beginning to end, from the beginning. You got to go through curves, and it takes you on a journey. So that next journey part, something that's really key. So I believe the next has a great journey. But I've also read books in which the journey is everything and the jungle, the setting, is completely missing. And that's equally, I would call those, this is a little derogatory, but I don't care. I would call it sitcoms in novel form, you know?
Sure.
It's a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
It's a lot of kind of here's the next plot element, and yet these two-dimensional characters, and you don't get past, you know, a living room setting and they're cooking spaghetti.
Right. And that's all you get. Well, and I think the complexity here with the relationship with his brother when they were growing up and the grandfather and the grandfather's relationship to the, you know, this other, well, the other couple of characters that are in there, it's all, and I, you know, I like how you go from the modern day setting to the flashbacks, the modern day setting to the flashback, because it all blends very smoothly together. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm now enjoying the most in the next is that you have these, you know, characters who just have struggled with, you know, all of these demons in their lives, and you see how it's impacted them. And, you know, years later, the relationships that they have with other people and how so many relationships are very similar when we think that everybody's so completely different. And I just compliment you again.
Thank you. I think that the past ties into the, I know the past ties into the present in many different thematic ways. The most superficial of which is just the notion of spying. I think at every single
event
in this book, in the past and in the front, every single event has to do with spying, peering into an environment or another setting that you're not supposed to be looking at is the most superficial, you know, theme of the whole book. And that happens in the past, you know, with in the trailer. It happens, you know, with the two brothers spying on the guys in Tilden Park in Berkeley. And it happens when them spying on the dog and the Moody's, you know, the Rhodesian little section. And then, of course, in the present, it's all about that because it's following the rear window template of looking out the courtyard at your neighbors.
I didn't want to say that, but that's exactly what I thought. I thought this is so rear window, but it you know, in a completely different way. But it's so rear window as far as the spying goes. And but in just you know, it, you always think, well, it's going to be cute to, you know, take a look across the way and you see your neighbors getting undressed or, you know, cooking or whatever it is. But this takes this to a completely different level. And I guess, you know, and you'll have to tell me, because even though I have neighbors that are 5 feet away from me, you know, the windows are spaced and such, and they're never here, so, to be quite honest. So even if I wanted to spy on them, I, you know, they're here on the holidays. Is that more common in New York? Is that
absolutely more... yes.
Really?
And here's a little secret that only people close to me. Well, I think I've actually mentioned this in some other blog. But these neighbors, most of the neighbors described in the book, are actual neighbors that I see every night.
Wow.
Across from my window, and I hope my neighbors never. I don't actually know them. I haven't met them, and I hope I never do, because they would probably throw eggs across the way at my window if they knew. But Schlangzilla is there, and oh, it's so funny because I came home one time, and Schlangzilla was there, and he gets it on with men and women. And I know this because at first I always saw him like every Friday night. He'd be with some woman. The last woman I saw him with was a beautiful woman, very, you know, big old breasts and everything that straight guys love, and straight black hair. And her legs were up like, you know, rabbit ears, the TV antenna, right there with the curtains open and the lights full on right in front of the window. They had no shame in this very New York. And he was just plowing her. And then that was fine. But then a couple weeks later, I looked across and I just glanced. And, oh, and there were two legs again, only they were hairy legs, hairy legs. So he was going at it with a guy.
Wow.
That's Schlangzilla. So I called him Schlangzilla in my book because he's that big size-wise. And then there's the couch potatoes, and I actually adore the couch potatoes because I watch them every night, and they're just – they do exactly what they do in the book.
Right.
You know,
you can totally see them.
Yeah, they eat pasta, bread, and watch TV. That's it, sitting on their couch together, and they're big, lumpy guys. And then, of course, the Broadway dancer's there. He's just this I describe him in the book as like a whippet on Red Bull, just this frenetic energy. Even when he's sitting still on his brown love sofa, he's just all this energy, just never is still. And I think that I call her, it sounds bad, but affectionately, you know, I actually really like the couch potato, the beached whale. So I call her the beached whale, and that's horrible, but the character, if you know the character and where he's coming from, it totally makes sense that he would call this woman the beached whale. But she actually is across the street from my apartment, the way from my apartment, and she's this large woman. She never ever leaves the apartment. She's large. She sits, you know, she lies down on her futon watching TV, her breasts draping down to the futon. She, you know, this is her life, eating popcorn. She actually does that.
Well, and the thing that I liked about the character in the book, though, is he has a moment where he wants to try to maybe rethink how he thinks of her, and then he accepts her for who she is.
So there's this whole, because of the past, this guy relates to what everybody else would call this kind of, this woman with no life in the apartment, and yet he knows her. He's enriched by a very different experience of what a woman like that is through his experience with this woman named Sally. By the way, in my past, Sally was a real person that I went bike riding once, and on my silver Huffy dirt bike in the hills of Berkeley, and it was when I was first learning how to ride a bike, and I got to a speed where I froze. I couldn't turn. I didn't brake. And so I went right over the hill, right into Sally's backyard, and there was a pile of bricks. And I split my head open. And Sally's the one that called the ambulance and called my parents and did everything, you know. And I was unconscious, but I hear she took care of me. She basically saved me. And then, you know, months later, she came by and I literally was pulling these strange little stitches out of my forehead, because I'd never seen stitches before.
Uh-huh.
You know, these red and yellow and blue stitches out of my forehead, and she brought this metal large fire engine truck for me to play with as a gift, and she was really a beautiful person. But anyway, in my book, I included her, and the beached whale is very reminiscent of who Sally is. And so it informs his his when he's able to remember his past, because the book goes on and he indulges in his memories more because he's able to, because of this interaction between the present and the which opens up the past. He's forced to open up the past, which therefore rebounds and informs him and enriches his experience about the present. And so this relationship weaves in and out like a tapestry in this book.
And I think it's those relationships that come and go. I mean, for this, I really do mean it in a complimentary way, is it is like watching a sitcom or a drama that you watch all of the time. You start to become familiar or invested in those other characters, like the gentleman down on the bottom floor who, you know, has given up all of his money and, you know, he's poor and destitute, but the man that comes and delivers food to him once a month, you know, they have a special bond or they have a special relationship, you know, and it's, you know, as you go and talk about, you know, the king and queen up on the penthouse and what's happening in that particular situation, you know, every once in a while you'll kind of drift back to, you know, the couch potatoes or one of the other characters. And it's like, oh, I've been wondering what's been going on with him. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a nice little check-in with, you know, familiar people that you really kind of like in that, you know, in that arm's distance, arm's length away.
Right, which is very much along the lines of what Alfred Hitchcock did in the movie Rear Window, where, you know, when dramatic events happen, of which there are three main events in Rear Window, but you get updates on your neighbors. But more importantly, and I think the thing that I know, the thing that I indulge in the next that Alfred Hitchcock didn't quite as much, is that when you're in New York City, even though you are surrounded in front of you, on top of you, underneath you, behind you, with people everywhere, you can feel very, very much alone, especially if you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling in any way kind of tragically, you know, isolated from all these people around you pressing in on you. And so you can feel like nobody understands you. And with that perspective, especially with the main character, and I know I have felt this, I know that when I was initially writing this book, that's the state of mind I was in. What becomes familiar, people that become familiar, even if they are across the courtyard, become your family. They become the thing that you're, at the very least, you're connected to, even if it's this distant one-way connection. You start to feel warm feelings to them because of the mere familiarity of them. And that's a very New York experience, and I'm sure it's universal in some ways. But I know that when I decided in my book to incapacitate our hero, not because he had a broken leg and therefore couldn't leave his apartment, but because he was depressed and to some extent agoraphobic, and that was going to be his main reason that he couldn't leave the apartment, I knew I had to explore what Alfred Hitchcock sort of touched on, was this lonely feeling of being in your apartment and disconnected from everybody, and yet you can connect in this small way by becoming familiar with the comings and goings and little habits of your neighbors across the courtyard.
And I think that is so brilliantly done, because you really do have him disconnected from everything. In a world where everything is connected on the internet and cell phones, even a cell phone is shut off for a good portion of the book, so he can't even make a phone call. Right. So I thought that was quite clever.
And that was strategic, because in a mystery, the biggest obstacle that everybody has to go to is, well, why can't they just call the police and get the police to deal with it? In this case, one is that he's not positive there is a murder. Two is that he can't pay the bills, so his cell phone gets disconnected, which is exactly what would happen.
Exactly.
So
oh, my gosh.
You have no money. Right.
Well, it's, you know, it's what happens in the next. So here's the deal, Rafe. I would spend the next 36 minutes talking more about that book, but I know we've got at least four or five different things that you and I wanted to chat about tonight. Are we at a good point to maybe move on, or is there anything else you want to leave the listeners about on the next right now before we start a new dialogue?
Let's move on.
Okay.
This book came out a year ago, and though I love it, and I've loved the journey and the you know, award nominations and the reader feedback, it has been a year now, and my brain, frankly, is on to the next.
You're moved on. Right. Well, let's talk about that. You've got this new book that you're working on called Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch. And if that's not the title to a successful number one book, I don't know what is. I love the title. So tell us about the book and what can readers expect and when will it be out?
So it will be out later, and my publishers don't even know this, but it will be out, I believe, at the very beginning of next year. And the reason why is because this book needs to be accompanied by an album. So it's a novel and an album. They both stand alone, but if you want the full immersion, you can get both and listen to the album as you're reading the book. So I guess I should start at the beginning. When I first moved to, came back to New York, I had been in San Francisco for a decade and then moved back to New York. And I had this song, and the song was called Sky on Fire. And the song was composed a couple of years ago, prior to moving back to New York, but I couldn't figure out what genre the song belonged to. And then I started imagining a country accompaniment to it. And then I realized I'd written a country song. I just didn't know that I'd written it until I actually put the right instruments to it. So I went to the only place in New York City that had that played country music at the time, and that was called the Big Apple Ranch. It's just a studio that's rented. It was on 19th Street at the time. They rent out the studio on Saturday nights, and it's a bunch of dancers, as it turns out. And though I only went to listen to music, I ended up dancing, and that became this whole new journey of dancing. It opened up so much in my life, so much that expanded and evolved from just country dancing to West Coast swinging to all sorts of modern line dancing. That includes hip hop. It includes different types of dancing. So it kept expanding. And what also went along with that were the people that I met at the Big Apple Ranch. There's so much that I'm not that is in the novel that I can't get to in this radio show, except to say that growing as a person myself was in the Big Apple Ranch was an integral part of that. I felt like there's kind of a Ray phase before the Big Apple Ranch, and there's a Ray phase after it. And
wow,
it was very much on lockdown, and then after that was just this guy that just blossomed and opened up physically, erotically. Just to have a place to go at nighttime, because before I could never, all I could do is watch a movie at night because I didn't know how to interact with people very well. And then Big Apple Ranch happened. Romance happened at the Big Apple Ranch.
Ooh.
And in real life. And I can't name the names, but I can tell you that I made a fool of myself in a huge, big, bad way.
Oh, I love that. Now, do you have a story about making a fool of yourself you can share with everybody? Because those are the best.
Well, I can say that this is what the book is all about. That's the Big Apple Ranch is about this illicit affair that ought never to have happened, but then did happen. I can say that growing up as a Christian Scientist, I did not have much sexual experience, much appreciation for other people's bodies, and I was probably the worst sex most people had ever had.
Wow! That's quite a list.
I know, and I don't mind saying it now because I'm a different person, but I can say that when I was two-stepping with certain people, and particularly the subject of this book, I can say that I had the most kind of erotic, but more than eroticism, it was sensual experience with someone I had up until that point. It was to connect to somebody with another with just corporeally, and then psychologically, where you're forming a partnership together, mm-hmm. dancing, where. Yes, there's, in entitled, there's a leader and a follower, but actually there's a synergy that's going back and forth where the leader is looking at what the follower wants to do. And the follower is looking to, for the leader's impulses, and you're going back and forth, and the energy and the dynamics are changing back and forth together, not because one person tells, it dictates it, but because you're listening and leading. From moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, and in that respect is very much like the Meisner technique of acting that I was teaching. It's all interconnected, and I connect all this in the novel.
So do you think Rich, that the experience that you had with your dance partner was connected to your theatrical training that you had, and maybe that the connection of the two just kind of help at least in your brain say, okay, now I've really got something special? Or do you think it was just kind of circumstantial?
Yes, in two ways. Because Meisner technique is all about moment to moment to moment. You don't look back and you don't anticipate the future. You are in the moment and you commit entirely to that moment. And that's your truth. Dancing is also very much about you're in the moment and you commit to that moment, the stretch, the compression of that moment. And you don't want, if you make a mistake or if anything, you don't dwell on the past. And if you're anticipating the future, it's only a couple counts. But you're listening to the music and you're, building to that music, but you're in that moment together because you don't know what your partner wants to do in the next moment. So in that respect, there's a, living in the moment thing that Meisner technique of acting as well as dancing have in common. But the other thing, and the more important thing, is that Meisner opened you up to feeling things. And that, to me, was the most important thing about my experience in dance, was that I could and do feel the dance. Like I never go on the floor and just phone it in. And I listen to music. I let it move me. But being open to emotions was at that time, when I first, I wasn't really open to emotions prior to Meisner technique, and that led into an experience for dance that became addictive of feeling, of going there to feel emotions. Of course, that opened me up to a world of trouble when it came to love, but that it's all learning experience, and there's so much to learn from. I could never regret what I went through at the Big Apple Ranch, never, because it led to so many things. I would say it led to, let me give you an overview of with these two books. I did get into a major funk after this love affair had ended, and getting out of that funk is what the next is all about. It's that kind of therapeutic process, mm-hmm. getting back to the light. Once you're in the light, you get the perspective of whatever got you into that funk to begin with, and I would say that process is The Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch. Right? It's like, now that I have the perspective, I get to look back and go, oh, I know all the steps that
right
that led to this catastrophic feeling. It's a romance, so of course there's a happy ending at the end that in real life didn't quite happen, but you know what I mean.
Author. You've got to sell it. Unless you're going to make a series out of it. You're going to have the tragedy if it's Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch Part 2.
So when I was in the midst of this, I call it an affair. Now, I would not say the other person would call it an affair.
What would the other person call it?
He compartmentalizes so well that I would say it's all bookended by, it's just a dance. We just had a good time on the floor, and outside of the, when we kiss or hold each other outside of it, it was probably very bookended. I don't know how precious he felt about it, and I don't care, because this is the reason why I am loving writing this book is because it's my perspective. I don't have to substantiate it, justify it. But I know that while I was going through it, I was writing all these songs because I was so overwhelmed and overcome with all these feelings for him and about my experience at the ranch and with him. because of him that I was, I had to write it all. I had to, I hadn't written a novel then, then, so I wrote all these songs, 22 songs actually. And so,
holy cow!
Right. And so that's why I felt, you know what? I need to release an album when I release this book, because this, it's the complete experience, right? It's the complete.
Oh my gosh. I love this.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think this concept is great.
I don't know. Have you ever heard of this being done before? Because I haven't. I've researched it. I don't know any novelist.
Not for something like this. I do know somebody who has written a classical CD for a young adult fantasy book that he's written. He's done this for two books now. But I mean, it's a very niche market, very targeted audience on, you know, who that's really aimed at. But I think for something like what you're doing here, you know, you have a much wider scale of, you know, potential readers that would want to be reading Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch, and to couple that with a CD that's going to give them some, you know, country music along the way, I think it's just, it has to work. This is like a number one on the album and New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah, and I just, because I wrote the songs as the experience happened, I wasn't even thinking album. I wasn't even thinking
right.
Who would accept it. It was just, I had to be truthful about this experience. I would say, I mean, now that I've, you know, the songs are written and I'm recording them now, and now that the book is about 75% done, I would say that there are purists out there that are just not going to take to it, wouldn't you say? I mean, they're not going to novel it, you know, those who want to read just a novel, they don't want it supplemented by anything, that the novel is just
I think that this is, you are the innovator and you're the groundbreaker for doing something that's new and fresh, and to be able to put together a book that people want to read. And if it's, you know, if reading the next is any indication of what a fantastic book Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch is going to be, people are going to want to read that. And then, you know, if they're already invested in you having the CD to go along with it, I think it's a no-brainer. People are going to go, I've got to go get this.
Yeah.
You're on the pulse of it.
Yeah, I am. It kind of makes my heart go a little faster, but, you know, that's a different type of mindset, is marketing the thing. Right now, I just got to finish it.
Well, you know, there's two completely different jobs, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're going to play a song right now called Dead in the Water. Tell us about that so we can make sure we get this in. Okay.
So the album is going to be country, but when a group of my buddies and I decided, hey, let's just record this one just to have a sample and see where, you know, just to flesh it out a bit. It didn't turn out to be country. It turned out to be, well, I don't know, you know, like down by the river, that kind of song. Just something that's more, I don't know, which is, it feels like you're jumping off the cliff, but which I love. But it's not as country as I think it will be when we actually do a recording. But this is just a demo. And the setup, I don't know if the plot's that much important, because you get it's a song, it stands on its own, but it is the point in the relationship in which the shit hit the fan in a big way. And this guy, although it sounds like this guy's giving up, it's actually an act of self-preservation.
I love it. Now, for the song, Rafe, did you sing on this, or what did you do? Because I know you do so many things, I don't want to just put you in one bucket.
I sang in this, and my voice isn't the best, but whatever, it's a demo. And I played the piano in it. And then the guys, my buddies, they did all the guitar work.
Cool. And then did you write the song also?
Oh, yeah, I wrote the song for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, oh yeah, I wrote the song too. Okay. Yeah.
No,
Rafe, you do it all.
No. I mean, the thing is, it originated from me needing to write songs, right?
Gotcha. And so love it.
This is,
love it.
Yeah, this is the song. So go
ahead. Okay, everybody, this is Dead in the Water. We'll be right back after this.
Every last ray, yeah.
Is Rafe Hayes. This is his song, Dead in the Water. That's a demo that he has done for his upcoming album that's going to accompany Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch. And while the song was playing, Rafe and I were talking behind the scenes. We have a secret bat phone that we go to while music is playing, and was asking him what it was like to write songs that are going to be part of this. What do you have a different process that you use, Rafe, when you're writing songs for anything compared to sitting down to write a novel?
Nope, I do not. And that's a good question that you asked. That's really apt. I think a lot of people have that belief that the processes are different, but no, it's really the same. It's this call and response between the truth, your emotions, and whatever format you're using. And for me, the detail, to me, music is, and writing is, again, it's this... I don't know the right metaphor, but it's this momentum of emotion, a momentum of emotion that you're riding on, but it's all riding on extremely specific things, right? Whether in a book it's letters, it's language, and in music the specific things are notes and counterpoint and chords and cadences, and yet I also feel like if you say something like cadence and then you say something like the musicality of writing or the poeticness of writing, I feel like it's the exact same thing. You have a certain rhythm that you're writing to, and then writing to, it builds up tension, and then it releases into some conclusion in a novel, and in music it releases as you conclude the cadence and you get back to the tonic. So I feel like the tension and release is also so in my brain anyway, it's so similar. The journey is similar, the process is similar. Man, though, listening to that song again, it just brings all those emotions back.
Is that crazy? How, I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, that's a raw nerve. Ouch. But you know, it just felt
when I wrote that thing, it was just it was so hard to go through. Knowing, because I wrote this song knowing what I had to do, which was to stop this, let me call it relationship, but it was not defined as a difficult relationship. I had to stop it because it was tearing me up. And point where I felt like there weren't many doors open other than, like, everything was closed, caving in on me. It was just, everything became dark. And so I felt I had to get out of it entirely. And the way I got out of it was not in any way exemplary, but that's what the book's about.
So we'll have to read the book to find out what happens. But yeah. Okay. So when you write a song like this, and I'm asking because I am but a newbie, and so I bow to your greatness here today, Rafe, as far as writing a song or performing anything here. When I write a song, I'm trying to go, okay, if I have to sing this for the next 20 years, I don't want to have to go out on stage and barf because I hate the song or it makes me want to cry every time. And there's one song on my new album, and we're not going into that, but there's one song on my album that I did because I had to do it because it was part of a thing, okay? That's all I'm going to say. So when you write this song, Dead in the Water, and it's not even released yet, it's not a final song, what happens if this becomes like your trademark song? I mean, how is this something that you'd be comfortable performing for the next 20 years? What do you think about?
Yeah, but again, I have a different perspective because I would like nothing better than to get onto the stage and be on the verge of tears. I mean, that is living, and I also know that when I say this brings up emotions, it brings up new emotions, meaning I feel the power, the surge of the pain from the past, but I put it in perspective of today. So it's a different emotion, though it's not the most pleasant one. It's in the perspective of today, of Rafe Hayes in today's world. And so it's a moving forward feeling, right? It's a moving forward. I would like, and again, I would like nothing better than to hit a raw nerve and be asked and paid to hit a raw nerve. That's to me exhilarating. It's life and it's truth.
I'm in awe of that answer. That's so much more than I could have asked for. But boy, I'm telling you, hearing the song, you feel the emotion in here, and it's just like, oh, this is so hard, but.
Here's the other perspective is that what's the opposite of that? You could be looking at life every day and looking at a spreadsheet.
Sure. That's just as bad.
formulas, right?
Right.
And doing accounting and doing reports for other people that you don't even reap the benefits of. So that's the other type of life that you could be leading. And most people do. In fact, I do during the day. So when I think of what would I rather be doing, feeling all these larger-than-life emotions, right, of singing or writing or performing or sitting at a computer and, looking at Excel.
Oh, so true.
What would you rather
do? Well, I'd rather do what you're doing, which is making brilliant stories and music. So when you were sitting down, you said the book is about 75% done and you have written the songs for the album. How many songs do you have composed for the album?
So I have 22.
Okay.
And the thing is, the rabbit hole is that the moment you start refining one, a new song springs up. But I would say I have 22. Honestly, to be truthful, I have 18 that actually came from the experience that I wrote during the experience. Since then, I've written a lot more. It's even evolved beyond country. And now I just have to, I started as country. Now I'm feeling, there's more folk, there's more rock, there's more hard stuff going on as I'm evolving as a musician. But I'm going to stick to this album, and it's going to be more country, even more country than Dead in the Water. Is because Dead in Water is not country at all, really, but it will be more country. Also, the more I'm dancing, the more I want to write dance music.
Oh, I can't wait!
And I'm not talking about house dance music, thump. I'm talking about, just some like, really good dance music that's got kind of got R&B in it. It's got
like dance music should be.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was just Facebooking with, this guy named Joey Warren, who pretends to hate me, but he actually likes me. But he's just a great choreographer. And so now I'm thinking, God, I want to write a song that he can choreograph to, because I like the way he moves.
Oh,
I like
wow.
But in the way you choreograph. So my brain is like moving on to that. But there's definitely about 18 of songs that I wrote for that are definitely, and of that I have to pare it down to about 12 for the album.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's nice that you have extras, you know, and I think that it gives you the freedom to tell a great story and still get your message across without a lot of extra, not that the other six songs are fluff, but, you know, without a lot of extra fluff. So it's really, you know, very focused. But I'm so thrilled to hear that you are creatively inspired to do all of these other things. So now you've probably got albums 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 all ready to go. You just need to write another book to go with those.
I mean, this is going to be the grand experiment to see how this flies. I don't know many people that, you know, read and listen to music at the same time.
Well, it's not like you're saying read chapter 3 plus, you know, press song number 3. And, you know, this song goes with this chapter. Does it?
Actually, let me tell you the format. Actually,
okay.
How much time do we have? The format is that this is the story is about a guy who's got a gig in this saloon where he's asked to sing all these songs which he's trying to let go of because he wrote them when he was there. And so as he's singing, he's all the emotions and the story gets dredged up.
Oh my gosh!
POV. So actually, yeah, it is.
It is kind of that.
The very song that he's singing about is
going to be
the subject of the chapter, right? So, is this inner? It's a flashback type of thing, but it's also a forward-moving romance because it's a happy ending, and it all leads to a happy ending.
Oh,
and I say that kind of
wait.
Cynically because it all leads to an ending I once would have loved to have arrived at.
Sure. There we go. Well, that's fair. I mean, that's very, very fair. So, with the next, I get a sense that a lot of this is autobiographical, or at least there's a lot of things that you draw from, you know, your past, growing up and things like that. How different is that from writing a book that's completely fiction?
I don't think I've written the next was my first book. So I don't have a lot of writing experience beyond as far as novels. I hear from more experienced authors that your first books are often autobiographical because you're writing, you know, you're usually compelled by your own experiences at the beginning. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I never wrote the next because I was trying to write a career for myself. I really just had to get myself out of a hole and back into the light. So I wrote a book that would facilitate that and open that door into a healthier state of mind. And that was it. I didn't even know if I was going to publish the darn thing.
Wow.
So I wasn't writing for a career. Now that I'm writing the next, the follow-up book, which is
now
a
you are.
Separate story, but I'm the same person, right?
Yeah.
So this is, again, it's compelled by my own, and even more so, my own personal experiences. That being said, I am writing another book, which is a sci-fi novel, which is more fictional. But I have to say, I think I am always going to be the type of novelist that writes from an autobiographical point of view. I don't know yet how to divorce my real circumstances and emotional responses to my circumstances I don't know how to divorce all that from the stories that I write yet. So,
well, I'm going to say good, because I love the next. And if Last Dance at the Big Apple Ranch is going to be like that, then I'm on board. So keep doing that.
It's intense and steamy.
Yeah. And now we sent over some notes earlier today, and one of the things that you have on here is romance versus a love story. How would you kind of characterize each of those in your writing? Because, you know, you do kind of have this little love story in the next, but and I love that you're dragging this out, and I can't wait to finish the last 40 pages tonight on in what's going on in the book. But
so there's romance in the next, but it's the category is solidly in the thriller, because
its
framework is not a romance. So romance with a capital R has a specific framework. And I frankly, I don't respect the framework as much as readers would love me to respect it, because I don't. Real life is much more interesting than always having a happy ending and these certain plot points that all romances go through. That, to me, make it very predictable. But that predictability is what certain romance, capital R romance, readers love about that genre. They love the predictability of the stops on the train for romance. I am abusing that formula in a big bad way, because that formula bores me to fuck. I hate it. I will have the happy ending, and I will grant them that, but the journey to that is going to be much more intense,
yeah,
much more realistic, and much more, let me say, fluid, and it's not going to be as linear a plot as romance readers with a capital R love, because I don't think that way. It's not enriching to me. I don't want to write a cartoon type of romance, because that's not me, that's not my style, and don't even read, pick up my book if that's what you want. If you know what I mean? If that's what you want, a cartoon, a two-dimensional romance.
That's not it. You write, I mean, you write very real life. You know, a lot of the comments that you have in the book, you know, it's kind of, they're things that I would think. It's like, you know, does this person think this? Do they think that? Why aren't they calling me back? It's been 8 minutes. You know, all the things that you would have that take place in real life. And you write that so clearly that, I mean, it's agonizing sometimes to read those words. It's like, just text them back. And you
well,
know,
that's the thing is, I'm not afraid of agony, but I think a lot of people are. But you know, it's in the perspective of a good storyline, right? The good story, the storyline has to come first. So we have only like 30 seconds left or 60 seconds left. What do you, I'm worried.
Well, we've got about a minute and a half, so we're good.
Yeah. All right. So, what else? Ask me one more question.
What are you going to do with the rest of your summer?
I am going to two dance weekends right now. So this
weekend
I'm going to Las Vegas.
Oh my, you're almost, I should I'll just drive over and say hello.
Should. I'll be there Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then and flying back on Sunday. And then the following weekend I'm going to be in Orlando at this thing called Fun in the Sun, which is another line dance weekend. Beyond that, I really don't know, because I haven't planned everything. I think I'm going to go to California, Southern California at some point to see you.
Yeah, you have to come out. We'll hang out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I hate to tell you this, it's like 335 days of sunshine a year. And at least where I live, it's at least, you know, 65 to 73 degrees most of the time. So
I love L.A. I mean, I love L.A. I love the dance scene up there. People talk. I don't really know a lot of industry people. So I think because of that, I love L.A.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. Well, Rafe Hayes, you are a treat. You have a welcome open door here anytime. I want you to come back. We're going to play the album. We'll talk about your new book again, Last Dance of the Big Apple Ranch, after the first of the year when it's ready to go. For listeners who are listening tonight on Chat and Spin Radio or Westar Radio Network, go to rafehaze.com, rafehaze.com. But for everybody who's listening or watching the show right now, you can just click the link on the show page right there, and it's going to take you right to Rafe's website. Go read some of his fantastic blog posts. There's one in there about lasagna and pasta that you just have to read, and so many more. And with that, I'm going to say goodnight to everybody. Rafe, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much, and I can't wait to talk with you soon. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night. We'll see you Wednesday.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.